Welcome to another message from Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center, Kansas. For more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. It is our prayer to invest in generations to influence community.
This morning is a great day, and in that we're privileged to have a missionary guest with us this morning. And I don't know if you ever have met this wonderful lady, but I know Rob and I have been privileged to know her for a while and know her parents, and I know her parents have been here since we've been here. But I don't, Christy, have you ever been here? Man. Okay, so I knew it was first time since we've been here. So Christy Alexander is a missionary, and she's with us this morning. And she's going to be with us again here in September. And so we're going to kind of change it up a little bit and do something a little bit different this morning. And I'm really excited for it, and she's excited for it as well. And not only was she woken up by the thunder and lightning this morning at her hotel, but she had a bunch of Harley riders staying at her hotel, so she like got double rumble. And so none of us are with excuse. I mean, she went through it with the weather, but then with the Harleys, and so she's just like, yeah, she's ready to roll this morning. But Life Point, would you welcome Christy Alexander to the platform this morning? And so what I shot her an email week or two ago and said, hey, would you mind if we kind of change it up a little bit this morning? Because she can preach, man, and you're going to hear her preach in a couple months, and she's going to tear it up, and it's going to be awesome. And I know Robin came home from the women's event in the spring and was like, you need to sign her up. You need to bring her, because she just brought a wonderful word of the Lord. And so we're excited for her to be here with us in September. But so I emailed her and I said, hey, can we like change this up a little bit? And because my heart is, I really want our people to get to know our missionaries. And I want you to know a little bit about not just where they're at and have them come and preach a message, but kind of get into the mind of a missionary, get into a heart of a missionary. That's kind of scary, isn't it? All right. So we're going to do that this morning. And I shot her some questions at the beginning of the week and said, hey, this is kind of what I'm thinking, and we're going to just kind of flow with it. But we may go off track and just see what happens. But so this is Christy Alexander. Her parents are, well, I should let you do all this, but her parents are Mark and Vicki Alexander, who have, as I said, have been with us before. And let me ask you this question. How long have you been in missions?
27 years.
Okay, so is that 27 years as a missionary, because you started really young, if that was the case, or as a MK missionary kid?
So many, 20 some of those years were as a missionary kid, and my parents have been missionaries all of that time. And then I have been a fully appointed missionary for 11 years.
Okay, so you've been doing this for 11 years. When your parents went onto the field, where did you go?
So when we first went to the field, we were living here in Kansas. We had been pastors, and we flew to Johannesburg, South Africa. So I actually grew up in South Africa, and my family was there. I lived in South Africa for 8 years, so from 11 to 19, and I moved back to the States when I was 19 to go to college.
So 11 years old, you go to South Africa, not the stereotype, but you don't look like a South African. What was that like?
I loved it. I got to be with the kids' church, and I got to join them. And I was telling them my first thoughts, because when you're 11, It was my first, you know, big airplane ride across the ocean, and my parents hadn't been to Africa, so none of us had any idea what to expect. And I remember for the 2 years that my family was fundraising before we went to Africa, my parents put a kibosh on the what if. So my brother and I would constantly ask, well, what if this and what about that? And my parents didn't have the answers because they'd never been there. And so they didn't know what to expect either. But when I got there, we arrived in November, and it's South Africa, so it was Southern Hemisphere, so it was the middle of summer. And I loved it immediately. I absolutely fell in love. It's beautiful, and there were lots of missionaries that kind of welcomed us. And I started school. The school year starts in January, and it goes all year long. And so within my first few months, I was already enrolled in South African school. And the Lord was very gracious to just bless me with little South African friends. I actually do look like a white South African. I actually blend a little bit quite well. But in the villages, there's no blending. And so I loved it because there was so much diversity, and I just got to meet so many different people. But my mom and dad's perspective was a little different, because before we were going to Africa, people would, I didn't know this at the time, but apparently people would come up to my parents and say, what are you doing taking your kids to Africa, the darkest continent? Why would you take your kids, your little blonde kids? And, you know, when God calls you, you say yes. And so when we got there, as a kid, again, I didn't understand this, and God is gracious to protect, but South Africa was actually quite a dangerous country, and we moved there in 1992, and we were in the middle of apartheid. South Africa was still in the apartheid system, and so it was just be on alert at all times. And as a kid, you just kind of adapt. So when we moved into our house, we had guard dogs, we had you know, an 8-foot wall and gates and burglar alarms and all the things. And I just thought that was normal. And my parents, I appreciate my parents so much more now that I'm an adult, because for them, my mom especially talked about fear of being there and raising her kids there. And you kind of always have to be on the lookout and kind of have to just be aware. And so my mom talked about not wanting to instill the fear in my brother and I. And so we were blissfully unaware and just living our best African life. But for my mom and dad, I think they felt it more. But you know, the Lord was with us. And even in hard times, he is still with you. And so I loved growing up in South Africa. I still love it.
Awesome. Can you, so you grew up pastor's kid, then missionary kid, and now you're a missionary. Can you unpack that call to the mission field?
Sure. Yeah, we were talking about this in Sunday school. For me, it's just what I've always known. Missions is what I had always known. When I was 9, we went through missionary training, and I remember going through the missionary training, and they have older MKs. It's like camp, you know, 8 weeks of summer camp, only it's all intentional and teaching our families how to be missionaries. And so our camp counselors, we call them a chief, and their little group that they take care of is their tribe. And so I remember being, you know, as a kid, as a 9-year-old, just thinking, that's so cool. I want to be a chief. I want to work with missionary kids always. And I'm so excited to be a missionary kid. And I remember in Africa growing up, every night I would crawl in bed and I would just like lay in my bed and just think, I have the best life. I wish I could do this forever. And I just remember thinking, knowing even from such a young age that I was blessed. And when I came back to the States for college, it was just like, can I go back? Can I go back? Like, have I filled my 4 years yet? Can I go back? I just wanted to be overseas. I just wanted to be a missionary. But when I was in college, there was a missionary. I was at a church in Springfield, and there was a missionary that came and spoke. His name is Dick Brogdon. And he leads a movement that we have in a missions movement called Live Dead. And I remember him talking about Muslims. And I was maybe 21 or 22. And I sat kind of towards the back of the church, bawling and weeping, and my heart was so heavy. And I knew in that moment that it was more than just, I want to go, I want to go. It was, oh, I have to go. I can't not go. But for me, the calling was different because I just assumed that I would go back to Africa because it's what I knew and what I loved. And so I told the Lord, yes, this would be so great if I go back and let me show you all the ways that I can help you. And through a series of circumstances, I was in Rwanda in my early 20s, and I was there for a short-term trip. And when I was there, the Lord he'd already called me into missions. I knew I was going, but he kind of made it very clear that he was going to shut the door to Africa, that I wasn't going to serve in Africa. And I really wrestled with that because I thought, Lord, you need me. I know Africa. I am a great African. You should use me and my skill set. And he made it clear. He said, no, I want you to go to where you're dependent on me. And I didn't know what that looked like. So from the time I got to college to the time that I really felt the Lord release me to go into missions was actually 8 years. And a lot of it was just me waiting, just wanting to go. But in that season of me waiting, knowing that I had been called, but waiting, he was actually doing all the things in me that he needed to do, because we may think we're ready, but we're not. And so he actually knows. So the calling for me has just been a lifetime of seeing it modeled in my parents, wanting to be a part of it, but then him cementing, just go and love people. Doesn't matter where, just go love them.
So you're in Rwanda, you had that season. Then where did you land? Where did the Lord send you?
I was living in Springfield. I had graduated college, came back to Springfield, and I waited. I went back to Springfield and just got normal jobs that you get after college. And I just waited, and I then got a job working for the Assemblies of God headquarters, working in the MK office. We have an office for missionary kids. And I was working there, and it was the summer of 2007, and I felt this like stirring in my soul, and I knew something was changing, and we were doing our missionary training, summer camps, and I just knew something was stirring. And so my dad had come to town, and he took me out to lunch, and I said, Dad, I just feel like something is stirring, and I just feel like maybe it's time. Maybe the Lord is releasing me. And so I said, but I don't know where to go, and I don't know what to do. I just feel like, I just know that the Lord is releasing me to go. And he said, well, you don't know until you get your feet wet, so why don't you just apply and see what happens? And so I applied for missions, and it's actually an extensive, huge, big, long process. And they didn't turn me down. And so then from there is then when I got appointed in 08.
Okay. Let's back up real quick, because all of us know and have experienced, maybe some of us here are kind of in that season of, I feel like the Lord is calling me to do this, or I'm in this season and I don't like it. It's painful. It's frustrating. And this is kind of a detour from our conversation, but how did you navigate that? And maybe there was moments where it was a train wreck, but you landed on your feet. Can you speak real quick to us about, can you just give some counsel to people that may be here that are going, man, this seat, you know, I got this thing, but I don't know I don't feel released, or can you just speak to that?
Like most of us, I don't like to wait. And especially if the Lord has given you a dream, you assume, I think a lot of times when we feel the Lord speaking to us, we assume it's for the immediate because we're immediate people and we like immediate gratification and we like the now. And so for me, in that season, I remember reading a book, I think his name is Rob Brindle or something like that, but it was called In the Meantime, when you know that God has a plan for your life, but he hasn't released you into that plan yet. And when I work with our missionary kids now that are back for college, and they're just like, I just want to go, I want to go, and I just, you know, I don't want to wait, I just want to be done with school and all of that. What I try to say to them from the mistakes that I made is just asking the Lord to teach us the gift of presence. And knowing that his timing truly is the only timing that matters. And for me, I think it's so important to be faithful with the hand that you've been given now and the hand that you've been dealt now. Because so many times we see we're at point A and we see point B and we think, well, it's a straight line and I'm just ready to go. But for me, I had so much in my heart that I needed to process and so much more maturing, and I needed the Lord to work in me in ways that I didn't even know. And I think so much of the waiting process is him carving out who he wants us to be. And if we're not faithful in that, we're going to jump the gun. Because when you get to point B, which in my case was missions, if you haven't gotten this stuff out of your heart and the junk and all the stuff, if you haven't dealt with it, it's going to come out tenfold. Because you're in God's plan and you're in his will. And so, of course, the enemy wants to come against you. And so I've had to learn in my life not to jump ahead of his plan and his purpose, and how the waiting is the refining, those refining moments. And if I'm not faithful with this, how can he trust me to be faithful when I get to point B? And sometimes A to B is like all over the place. But it's not my job to figure that out. My job is to literally one foot in front of the other, hands off, not in control, and say, God, I'm going to follow you with my heart and not my plan, but yours, which is so much easier said than done. Always.
Right. And that's a good word, isn't it? Faithful now. That's good. It's good. All right. So your current position entails working with, you've mentioned working with missionary kids.
Yep.
I know pastor kids, but missionary, like, what do you do? Sure. I mean, do you just, what do you do? What is a missionary to missionary kids like?
It's a fair question. It's funny because when I share about ministering to missionary kids, I cannot tell you how many times people say, I just never thought about the effect that missions would have on kids, on the kids that go. And you know, you support so many missionaries and you might see their pictures, but those kids are 100% as involved as their moms and dads. Even if it just means that kid is going to school every day, that kid is learning language and culture and has said goodbye to everyone they know and love, packed up everything that's familiar, is living in a culture that is far away from home. And our families, well, the number one reason that missionaries leave missions is because of their kids. Because if your parent in the room, you know this, if your kids aren't okay, you're not okay. And so the enemy, of course, wants to come against our families. And we see this all the time. And so I work with a ministry that's been around for 40 years. I'm a product of this ministry. It's called the International Society of Missionary Kids. So it's our Assemblies of God ministry. And we have 1,500 MKs from birth to 22 living around the globe in 200 countries with their parents. And our job, we have office staff, and then there's three missionaries, myself being one. And our job is to equip our families with all the resources that they could possibly need to keep their families healthy and on the field. We provide educational support, emotional support, spiritual support. So a lot of what I do is mentoring and discipleship for our MKs. Our MKs, it's kind of interesting to think about. Their parents are for sure discipling them, but they're in countries all over the world where they don't have kids' church or youth ministry or discipleship groups. They don't have mentors. A lot of them don't have Christians in their lives. And so we try to, I help oversee mentoring, where we try to get older missionary kids to pour into younger missionary kids through relationship. But I also help our families kind of on the back end of things when they're struggling, when they're coming off the field, or when their kids, I get emails all the time about mamas saying, my kid's having developmental issues. They're struggling with language. They're struggling with culture. They're struggling in their friendships. They're struggling in their faith. Can you help? And moms and dads are hurting, and their resources are so limited in their countries. And so we just provide resources. I help families with counseling, with mentoring. And then a huge part of what our ministry does is we provide educational support. Our missionaries sometimes they have to send their kids to boarding school, or they have to homeschool, and they may not be a homeschool family. Not everybody is. Or their kids are in French school, and their French isn't very great, and they're just struggling. Or, you know, I mean, there's like every kind of educational need you could imagine. We have a team of people that just provide educational support for our missionaries. So we really try to look at the unit and how can we prepare them culturally, at the front end of the game when they become missionaries, teaching them how to be missionaries. So a lot of what I do is and we have our missionary training where, so say you have your kids, and like my brother and I, we were 9 and 13 when we became MKs, and we didn't know. We'd never been overseas, so we didn't know how to be little missionaries. And so they teach us what it's like to eating ministry. So we have a thing called the eating ministry where with your chief and your tribe, so your counselor and your little group of MKs, and we put all this really gross food in front of you, like, you know, frog legs and kimchi, and we basically go to the Asian market and just store up on all random foods that we can, and we put this food in front of them. And we say, okay, you can only eat with your right hand, because in a lot of cultures, you can only eat with your right hand. And we say, all right, this is eating ministry. You don't want to be offensive to the national, so you need to eat this, and you need to eat it with a smile, and you're going to eat it as a team. And we teach the kids how to eat gross food gracefully. Not always gracefully, but we teach them little things like that, cultural adaptation. So the
stop, because everyone in here is wondering, what is the grossest thing you've ever eaten?
As of recently, the grossest thing I've eaten was a couple weeks ago at youth camp when I had to take a bite of raw cow tongue. But that was just here. One thing that we do is we take them. We're in Springfield, the James River. We take them down to the James River and we have them catch crawdads. Harmless enough. But then we bring out a big old vat of water that we boil, and we take the crawdads and we put them in the boiling water, and then each kid with each tribe gets their crawdad, and we say, okay, whole thing, pop it in. So there's no taking out the head, taking out the tail. We just everything, and those pinchers are so hard to eat, so we make them do that. I've eaten a lot of foods in Africa. I'm honestly not sure what I've consumed. I don't want to know, if I'm completely honest. My dad always prays, Lord, kill it before we eat it. Because you just don't know. Mapani worms in Africa are these really thick, fat, white worms that they just grill up and think are so tasty. And you just smile and nod and just have McDonald's afterwards.
Awesome. I'm speechless. I'm feeling what that feels like going down. So what are the biggest needs that you're seeing with, I guess this is a two-part, with the MKs that you're working with, what are some of the needs that you're seeing with them? Because we want to know how to pray for them, but then we'll circle back, and part two will be, what are the greatest needs that you're seeing on the field?
I think a lot of our MKs, here's the thing, is the majority of our MKs, we really love being missionary kids. And we really try to instill in them an MK identity. And we try to instill in them that it is a privilege to get to serve God in a foreign country. And so our kids really do love their countries for the most part. But when I visit them in their countries, a theme that I hear a lot is loneliness. A lot of our kids are growing up in countries where they have very few or no Christian friends around them. I think one of the challenges of that is, again, if the kid's not okay, mom and dad aren't. And I see our kids really struggling in isolation. Our missionaries are spread out, and we don't always have missionaries in the same places. And so there might be one or two families in a city of hundreds of thousands of people, and that can be very isolating. And so I see our families dealing with a lot of isolation. I see a lot of discouragement. We were talking in Sunday school, just the enemy just comes against our families over and over and over. So if it's physical health, if it's emotional health, we have kids that do deal with depression, anxiety, a lot of families that do, we'll see kids that will go overseas with their moms and dads, totally healthy, on par developmentally. They'll go overseas and they'll regress an age backwards in their developmental progress because it's traumatic. And so our kids are dealing with traumas in their own ways. Our kids in the Middle East, we just see challenges. If you're living in a Muslim country and you hear the call to prayer five times a day, and everywhere you go, you know that you are not wanted there and people are going to be kind, but they don't agree with you, it gets old and it's exhausting. And so, oddly enough, our missionaries around the world don't sleep well. I talk with a lot of MKs that deal with demonic nightmares. And the culture, the oppressiveness of the religions and their cultures, Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, really does affect our families. And so you see spiritual challenges as well. And kind of on every front, you just see challenges. Even our kids growing up in very secular countries, just overtly sexualized cultures. Our kids are growing up in cultures where they're seeing stuff they should never be exposed to, either violence or sexuality, on levels that far surpass what I've seen here in the States, even though it's getting worse here too. So just kind of on every front, our families are just facing challenges. And a lot of times our families don't know where to go. They don't know where to turn to for help because their team members are going through it, and sometimes it's hard to ask for help because, especially if they're living in a country that's, we call it sensitive, where they can't just put on Facebook, I'm a Christian living in Turkey, and I need you to pray. They can't say that, so sometimes their prayer request will be, we're having a difficult situation, we need your prayer. And so it's hard to be specific. Our missionaries in China, their challenges are the government is listening to them and watching them all the time. So they can't just call back to the States or send an email saying, we need you to pray for this. They can't say that. And so when you're discouraged and sometimes it's hard to ask, where do you go for that encouragement? And so I think just across the board, what I see is just missionaries are tired. And they love what they do. They love who they're with, but they do feel discouraged.
Yeah. And I'll just pause real quick. The second Saturday of the month second Sunday is Mission Sunday across Assemblies of God, and we do our best to pause and pray for our missionaries. And sometimes we don't do that in that service. But I want to encourage us that I can think of times where Dr. Carpenter, who was my missions teacher at college, would tell stories of a situation unfolding with his family, and no one knew about it, but there were some little old ladies in Timbuktu, Arkansas, that was his home state, that just got a burden to pray for the Carpenters in that moment, and them not knowing what was going on with the Carpenter family down in South Africa or wherever they were missionaries at, but it was at the very same moment that something traumatic was going on with that family, and God bridged the miles, and because those people prayed, the situation turned. And so I think this is why something like this is so important this morning, that you hear the heart, because God's gonna call you and use you to pray for missionaries, and you may not even know how to pray for them. You may not know, man, I don't even know them. But if God drops someone in your heart, be it a missionary or be it your neighbor, yeah, use that as a prompting of the Lord just to stop and to pray for them and to pray God's covering, God's protection. And because it's so, she mentioned the spiritual warfare. It's so, yeah, so real on the foreign field. I mean, it's here too, but it's, you know, it's more obvious, I think, on the foreign fields. All right, if you could say anything about pursuing the call of God on your life, what would that be?
Don't be afraid to do it. My mom and dad really modeled obedience to my brother and I. And they modeled what it is to say yes in the face of the unknown. And like I shared, when we got to South Africa, it was scary. And my mom even has said that at the time she wanted to pack us up and bring us back to where it was safe and comfortable. Because who doesn't want to be comfortable? That's where we all like to be. Nobody wants to step out into what's uncomfortable. But I think the call of God is he's so gracious and he's so very patient with us. And I feel like it is such a privilege to say yes to discomfort. Because when we say yes to being uncomfortable, we realize how small we are and how big he is and what a privilege it is to just be dependent on him. And so many times in my life, in the saying yes to the call, yeah, even though I wanted to be a missionary, the reality of it, it's not glamorous, it's not pretty all the time. It's, like I said, it's discouraging. And there were so many times when I had said yes to the call. And if I'm honest with you, I just felt like, did you call me to just leave me on my own and abandon? Like, did you call me to just not see me? And I remember being in Wales, my first year in Wales. I didn't know people. My parents were in Africa. My brother was in the States. I was on my own. I was young and didn't know, and I remember feeling so alone and so invisible, and just remember thinking it was a challenge just to go out of my apartment and buy groceries and just to do the very basic things, or like pay the electric bill or pay the water bill. It was just challenging. And every day just felt hard. And every day just felt like, what am I doing here? I am doing no good. I don't even know what cheese to buy. It's just, and this isn't an English speaking country. I wasn't even I didn't even have to learn another language, but I just remember thinking, Is this what it is? And I remember some missionaries, when I was growing up overseas, we call adults aunties and uncles. And so I remember some missionary aunties and uncle always said, remember the call. Because when you're on the front lines, you're going to forget that call and you're going to think, why are you here? And so I remember being in Wales and just thinking, why am I here? And then the Lord would remind me, because I asked you, and because there are people that need to know me, and those people need to know me more than you need to be comfortable. And that call, it wasn't to a place. I've never been called to a place. I've been called to Jesus, and I've been called to love people. So if I'm here in Valley Center, if I'm in Wales, if I'm ministering with missionaries in Indonesia, or if I'm in Springfield, it doesn't matter. The call is him and his people. And the second we deviate from that and try to put our preference and try to put our parameters on it, we've missed the point. And I think we are the ones that make the call this confusing thing, or, oh, I feel called to this or called to that. And that may be true, but at the end of the day, every one of us in this room and every kid in the kids' church, we're all called to Jesus. We're called to love him, and we're called to love his people. And so don't complicate it, and don't be afraid to say yes, because where you say yes, he unleashes territory and he unleashes his power. And the better it is if you're not comfortable, because it's his power. You and I have no... I take zero credit. If there is a drop of goodness that happens through me, it's not because of me. It's because of Jesus. And my calling is him. And so I can't really go wrong if I'm saying yes to him, because he's going to do it. And so in a way, the calling takes the pressure off of us, because it's, well, my responsibility is to love you. I may not always like you, but my calling is to love you, and my calling is to love Jesus. And if you keep it that simple, which I don't always, so don't get me wrong there, but if you can keep it that simple, it's hard to miss. Yeah. My calling is him, and my calling is yes, and my calling is obedience, and you just got to keep it simple.
I'll preach. That's good. To those who have never been on a missions trip before, or maybe it's been a long time, we're getting ready to go in February. We're going to go to Colombia, although we have some mission stuff we're going to be doing around here too through the fall. But what would you say to those that, why should they go on a trip?
I wish everyone could go on a missions trip. Obviously, I love missions, so it's easy for me to say that. And I've had people say, oh, I could never go. I don't like to eat weird food, and I like to have my own bed. And that's fair. That's fair. But when you step outside, there's something about stepping outside of our borders and stepping into a place where you may not know the language, you may not look like the people, and it may not be... Again, it may not be comfortable and it may not be what you like, but it teaches you that the world is so much bigger, and it gives you this picture of God's heartbeat for his people. I love, if I could just every Sunday be in a different culture and worship in a different culture, I love worshiping in different cultures because they see Jesus so differently than we do. It doesn't matter where you are. And I think it's so important when we go on a missions trip, first being able to see an experience bigger than us and thinking that is different than us, and cultures that maybe challenge ours, but maybe get us to think, oh, I didn't think about it like that. It helps you appreciate what we have. We are the most blessed people in the world. And when you go on a trip, you experience, oh my word, we're so blessed. We have running water. We have electricity. We have freedom of religion and speech. We are so free. And it just makes you appreciate that. But then getting to serve. I was just listening to a message this morning as I was getting ready, and it said, you know, the heart of Christ isn't just to love, but it says that he came to serve. And when you get to serve, it unifies your heart with other believers. And when you get to serve in any way, if it's laying bricks, if it's cleaning a toilet, if it's like holding kids, whatever, it bonds you to the Father's heart in the purest way. And so if you get a chance, it's just so fun to serve. And you can't always guarantee that it's going to go smoothly, but I think it teaches you that flexibility is an important part of life. And I just know so many people that have been on trips, and my family has hosted teams, and I get to lead teams all the time now to work with our missionaries. And I think it just gives them a glimpse of the Father's heart in ways that they never had before. So for those of you that get to go or are thinking about going, go. And if you can't go, know that your part in sending is also serving. And that's equally as important, because not everybody gets to go, not everybody can go, but like short-term missions or long-term missionaries, we can't do what we're doing if we don't have people like you sending. And so your part in sending is every bit, like, you are just as important as the one going. So your prayers and your finances are literally changing lives, not just of the people that go, that are being ministered to, but the people that go, I promise you, they're going to come back changed. And you get to be a part of that. So if you get a chance, I think everyone should go personally, but.
Cool. So you mentioned, I mean, your mission field is the globe because you're dealing with MKs. What do you see and what are you hearing God doing? Like, this is, could be a long over lunch eating worms question, but what do you see God doing? What are you hearing that God is doing different places around the world?
It's so fun getting to step into our missionaries' worlds. It's one thing when they come back, and that's so important, and I'm so glad that they get to share with you, for you guys to see, because like I said, you guys have sent them. And so I'm glad that they get to come. But the highlight for me is when I get to step into their world. And I was just recently watching a video that some of our missionaries put together, and it was all missionary kids. It was all MKs, and they're all serving in Muslim cultures. And all of them are just sharing about, like, I get to share with my Muslim friends about Jesus and what it's like as kids. In Arab cultures, they love kids. They love kids. So we're a mom and a dad that go into an Arab culture. Sometimes it can be harder, but we see our missionary kids who learn the language a lot quicker than their parents. So we have MKs that are little and they speak fluent Arabic, and or fluent Hebrew for our, we have kids in Israel that speak fluent Hebrew, and I've been with them helping them learn English, even though they're American. But seeing the kids getting to be a part of kingdom building and that inroad when moms are dropping kids off, or even in Europe, when moms are dropping kids off at school, there's other moms there. And maybe the missionary, maybe she wouldn't have the opportunity to get to know the women, but their kids go to, you know, tutoring together, they play soccer together. And it's amazing what God does through our missionary kids. I was in Germany last year, and I got to be a part of a coffee shop and a Chi Alpha group. And it was just so cool to see this work. So we were in Heidelberg, and there's this coffee shop that our missionaries started, and it's linked with a church. And people come in, and they don't charge anything at the coffee shop. And they just say, you can leave a donation. But if you come, just know that we might have a conversation with you. And so a lot of the Germans were hesitant at first, but then it's really good coffee. And so Germans are coming in, and they'll leave their donation. And then our German and international Chi Alpha students are able to minister to these Germans. And they're just sitting and having a cup of coffee, but they're able to just talk about life and talk about, you know, whatever, but they're getting to plant the seeds. And so some of our MKs are in the coffee shop, and they speak fluent German. And so they're having conversations. I love seeing that, and I love seeing just how God is using our families, and our families become the cultures. That's what we ingrain in them. You're not there as a visitor. You become that culture, which can have its drawbacks. But so when families say, you mean you live in Japan and you've learned Japanese, it just gives you so much more respect. And so we're seeing God just do so much through very basic things, but we're seeing our families just be so effective. And again, God is using not just moms and dads, but he's using kids of all ages, because they can get in. They can get in the culture. They can play with the kids on the street. And what a great inroad. And so a lot of our MKs are translators because they're better language learners. So we're seeing God just open doors in Muslim communities. We just sent a family into Iraq. So we have a family that have 4 children under the age of 9 that are living in Basra, Iraq, and they're killing it there. They are doing an awesome job. We have another family getting ready to go, 2 families getting ready to go to Basra. We just opened up Libya, and so we have families spending time in Libya, and we're getting ready to send more families into Libya. So we're getting families in countries that have never, they've never been able to go before. And we're seeing God's move all over the world, globally. We're seeing Christians coming, people coming to Jesus in China, and we're seeing just people all over the globe coming to know the Lord. And it's through relationships, because these people have invested their lives. It's because they've moved there, and they love, they're called to love the people, and God has given them a love for the people that they serve. And you know when you're loved. And the people around them know when they're loved. And so they're going to listen, because they know, hey, these people love me enough to bring their kids here and learn my language. I'm going to listen to what they have to say. And so we're just seeing all the time, so many God stories are happening.
So cool. So how, with that last question, how can we be praying for you? How can we be partnering with you?
I deal with, like I said, I deal with a lot of families that, a lot of times they come to me in their struggles, and I kind of, the way I say it is, I get to pastor our missionary kids, and that is a joy. You get to rejoice with them in their triumphs. You get to be excited with them for all the good things. But I always just need wisdom, because there are so many times when a mom and dad, or even MKs will come to me and they'll share their story, and I'm at a loss to know how to help them. It's beyond what I know. And I constantly need wisdom, just that God would give me guidance in how to help get our families the help that they need. Our kids that are coming back to the States for college, America's not their home. They've been living overseas. They come back here. They're so lost. And a lot of what I do is I spend time with those college students. And I just need wisdom in how to love them and how to mentor and disciple them. And so I'm always asking for wisdom and discernment, because, like I said, it's not me. I just want the Lord to do it, and I don't want to get in the way. And so I could always just use prayer for wisdom, discernment. And then I travel a lot, so protection. I know there are people praying for me. My mom being at the front of that line, and your prayers keep me safe for the hundreds of thousands of miles. God has been gracious to protect me, and I just pray that that his hand continues to stay on myself and my team as we travel, because anything could happen. But thank you for those prayers.
Sure. Can we show our appreciation to Christy?
This concludes today's message. We hope you can join us next Sunday for services beginning at 10:30 at Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center. To get more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. And we hope you can join us next Sunday with Pastor Steve Raines.